Welcome to Falun Gong News Direct from China and around the world. Today's stories include Australia, raising awareness about Falun Gong on New Year's Eve. Minghui Radio clarifies the truth inside and outside of China. What Chinese tourists want beyond sightseeing and shopping. Taiwanese college student learns Falun Gong and finds the guidance he had been seeking. Dark secrets of China's Hong Kong psychiatric hospitals. Turmoil in Heilongjiang. Local practitioners and residents harassed and monitored during high-profile trial. Now for the stories. Australia, raising awareness about Falun Gong on New Year's Eve. I know about the persecution of Falun Gong in China. One of my colleagues joined Doctors Against Forced Organ Harvesting, DAFOH, so I've heard about it, said Dr. Gerald Matthews, a psychiatrist in Geelong, Australia. On New Year's Eve, Dr. Matthews signed a petition condemning the Chinese Communist Party's, CCP's, forced live organ harvesting atrocities. He said he too wanted to join DAFOH. He was among nearly 500,000 people who came out to watch the fireworks in downtown Melbourne. During the festivities, Falun Gong practitioners set up a display on Melbourne City Square. They demonstrated the exercises and distributed information about Falun Gong and the persecution. Several tourists from China and local Chinese residents who stopped by the display condemned the persecution and decided to renounce their Communist Party memberships. In 3 hours, volunteers Xiao Mei and Ms. Liu helped more than 80 people quit the CCP and/or its youth organizations. Xiao Mei said, "Some families quit together. Some agreed to quit after chatting a bit. Some said they left China to get away from the party. Some were still deceived by the party propaganda. But every time they talk to us or take our materials, they can get more information." Nellie Duthick from France and Meiko Tsuji from Japan came to Australia to work temporary jobs during the holiday break. They stopped at the Falun Gong display to find out more and showed their support for ending the persecution. Nicholas, 18, and his brother Jake stopped to view the display. Nicholas said, "Torture should be banned. No country should allow this to continue." He said he would inform others about the persecution via social media. High school students Adam Henrell and Brandon came to watch the fireworks. They signed the petition and said that their family had traveled to China and noticed that Chinese people had no freedom of expression. This was the first time they had ever heard about Falun Gong, and they said they hoped the persecution would end soon. Minghui Radio clarifies the truth inside and outside of China. Practitioners in China and abroad have been using Minghui Radio programs to help Chinese people understand the brutal persecution of Falun Gong. The recordings are often effective where other methods of communication have failed. A practitioner who was arrested for her belief in China reported her bewildering experience at a police station. She recalled that as she tried to talk to the officers about Falun Gong, a young policeman's cell phone started ringing. He put the call on speaker and rested the phone on the palm of his hand. A Minghui Radio recording said, "This is the World Falun Dafa Minghui Radio Station. We are now going to present the facts about the Chinese government's state-sanctioned organ harvesting from Falun Gong practitioners." The young policeman held the phone higher, his eyes beaming at the practitioner. The other officers listened to the recording and smiled at the practitioner. When the practitioner later tried to do the Falun Gong exercises in the police station, none of the guards interfered with her. Some even encouraged her. Practitioners outside of China have been calling Chinese police officers and government officials, telling them to stop participating in the persecution, and asking them to release detained practitioners. Some practitioners play audio from Minghui Radio programs during their calls to make officers and officials aware of their roles in the persecution. Minghui published a report in 2012 about the father of a practitioner in China who enjoys listening to Minghui Radio. Although the father doesn't practice Falun Gong, he believes the programs have helped him quit drinking and smoking. He told his son, "Falun Dafa is good. Truthfulness, compassion, forbearance is good. I really believe it now. I will never forget it, never." Chinese tourists have also benefited from listening to the radio programs while abroad. An elderly practitioner in the United States relayed a story about using the radio programs at a tourist site to explain the Chinese regime's persecution of Falun Gong to Chinese tourists who had been misled by Communist Party propaganda. "About six women in their 30s passed by us. I tried to talk to them, but they were belligerent and made some rude gestures," she said. The practitioners stopped trying to talk to them and instead played radio programs about the Communist Party's harvesting organs from live prisoners of conscience and about the staged Tiananmen Square self-immolation. The group and other Chinese tourists stopped to listen. They learned about Falun Gong and the scale of the persecution. Minghui Radio is managed by the Minghui website and aired its first broadcast on November 9, 2005. The station offers a variety of Chinese language programs for the general public, including The Facts of Falun Gong and the Persecution, Stories of Reward and Retribution, Traditional Culture, and Tianyin Pure Music. Two programs, Minghui Weekly On Air and Cultivation Sharing, are aimed at Falun Gong practitioners. The station's programs can be found online at mhradio.org.
What Chinese tourists want beyond sightseeing and shopping. The number of outbound Chinese travelers is expected to reach over 100 million in 2015, according to a report by China Via, a Scandinavian pilot project centered on Chinese tourists. In addition to sightseeing and shopping for luxury goods, some have planned for a special gain. Inner peace after getting rid of the Chinese Communist Party's mind control. This, in some way, is the ultimate luxury for a population that lacks freedom. A young Chinese tourist held up a display board about the persecution of Falun Gong in China for 20 minutes at a Southeast Asian tourist site on November 28, 2014. By doing that, he connected his tour group to Falun Gong practitioners. A majority of the group chose to renounce their Chinese Communist Party CCP memberships. Some people, both inside and outside of China, have the misunderstanding that the movement to quit the Chinese Communist Party is a political conflict between Falun Gong and the CCP. So they chose to stay away from the fight and say they are neutral. However, many of the nearly 190 million Chinese who have disassociated themselves from the CCP see it as a personal choice based on conscience, after learning of the atrocities committed by the party, even today. Organ harvesting prompts more Chinese people to quit the CCP. A tourist elected to withdraw her party membership in Paris. She said, "Harvesting Falun Gong practitioners' organs for profit is devilish. The CCP will receive karmic retribution for this. I have to hurry up and quit the party to avoid being included in the karmic retribution. Otherwise, it may be too late." The regime's harvesting of organs from living Falun Gong prisoners of conscience has prompted many withdrawals from the party as more Chinese citizens learn of the atrocities. CCP is too evil is a common response from tourists. A Chinese tourist from Henan province told a practitioner in front of City Hall in Stockholm, Sweden, "I cried after I read about the organ harvesting." When the practitioner offered him an alias with which to publish his withdrawal from CCP organizations, he opted to use his real name. More tourists quit the CCP using their own names. 2014 has seen more Chinese tourists using their real names to quit the CCP organizations. A visiting Chinese scholar said the following after doing so at Oxford University in England. "The CCP cannot tolerate Falun Gong because Falun Gong is too honorable." In Troy, Michigan, a Chinese man accompanied his elderly mother to quit the CCP with her real name. She said, "The CCP is too evil. I have to do this." Another tourist told her group, "Let's quit the party first. Then we can go celebrate with a good meal." The practitioner volunteer asked whether they would use their real names or aliases. They responded without hesitation, "No alias. We quit with our real names." Tour guides encourage clients to quit the party. Some tour guides have incorporated quitting the CCP or learning about the persecution of Falun Gong into their group's busy itineraries. For example, at St. Peter's Square in Vatican City, a tour guide told the group as they approached a practitioner, Hurry up and sign your name to quit the CCP. We have very little time here. Please be quick. In Switzerland, a tour guide signaled a practitioner to give out pamphlets to his customers and said to them, "Take a copy. Everyone does this here. No need to be afraid. What's there to fear now that you're outside of China?" As the practitioner told the group about the persecution being covered up by the party propaganda, the guide commented, "Listen up. He explains it very well. Most of the tourists in the group decided to renounce their party memberships." In Toronto, Canada, a tour guide told a practitioner after he learned about the persecution and quit the party organizations, "Please tell my customers the same. I will help you." In Melbourne, Australia, a tour guide led his group to Falun Gong practitioners and encouraged the tourists to read their display boards. He said, "These materials are free. You can all take copies to learn the exercises. It's a very good practice." Sincere thanks to Falun Gong practitioners. I have not met such kind-hearted and trustworthy people for many years. What a blessing to come across you. A Chinese businessman told a Falun Gong practitioner who volunteers her time at the Sydney Opera House to inform Chinese tourists about the practice of Falun Gong and the persecution in China. Practitioners have reported more examples of such sincere thanks from Chinese tourists when they finally gain access to information that is unavailable in their home country. In Paris, two tourists said to a practitioner, "Because of your hard work, we now know the facts, so China has hope. Thank you. We support you." They thanked the practitioner 7 times. Several tourists told practitioners in Italy, "We've traveled to quite a few countries in Europe and often run into you. We've understood after hearing so much. You are remarkable. Keep up your efforts. Justice belongs to you. Rainy days will be gone." Taiwanese college student learns Falun Gong and finds the guidance he had been seeking. "I can find the meaning of life from this book. It is my hope. I really want to read this book," said Chang Chasheng, an undergraduate student from the National Taiwan University of Science and Technology. This was Cha Sheng's response to hearing about the Falun Gong book Xuan Falun at a seminar on December 5, 2009. He ordered the book and got it the next day. He read it for 5 hours nonstop. "I enjoyed reading it and couldn't put it down. Everything in it was new to me. The content is very good." He finished reading the first 6 lectures in one sitting. Cha Sheng first saw Shen Yun Performing Arts when he came to Taiwan in March 2010. "I was so touched. I felt a warm wave fly into my body and purify my whole body. I was full of energy after watching the show. It seemed all my worries were gone. I felt very peaceful and refreshed." The day after seeing Shan Yun, he finished Xuan Falun. He found a practice site in a nearby primary school in mid-April. He was so excited that he went to the practice site at 4:10 a.m. the next day to wait for practitioners to arrive. He learned all 5 sets of exercises that morning. Falun Gong's core principles are truthfulness, compassion, forbearance, and Cha Sheng strives to follow them in his daily life. He reads the teachings, practices the exercises, sends forth righteous thoughts, and writes letters to inform mainland Chinese about the facts of the persecution of Falun Gong. Through the Falun Gong Club at his university, he's held seminars, a Falun Gong study camp, and a movie screening to let people know about the practice. He said, "This is how I came to practice. Doing these things will let others know about Falun Gong." Cha Sheng grew up in a well-off family in central Taiwan and has always loved Chinese martial arts. He won a lot of Taekwondo championships and boxing matches starting in the 4th grade all the way up to high school. He was well known in his school. He worked hard on his studies and got admitted to the National Taiwan University of Science and Technology, an excellent school in engineering and business management. He was proud of himself. Yet in his first semester, his grades were poor. He was frustrated and wanted to find a way to make money. He participated in various clubs and became involved in the insurance business while being a student. For the next 2 years, he didn't make much money and borrowed money from his friends. He was frustrated and felt lost. That is, until he came across Falun Gong. Cha Sheng participated in a group study and experienced share gathering in Jintian in 2012 and learned what it meant to cultivate Falun Gong there. He understands the importance of looking inward. I am pleased that every day I can discover many of my shortcomings. I understand the importance of cultivating diligently and feel like I've improved myself daily. Cha Sheng got to know student practitioners from other universities and college in Jiantan. They decided to set up an intercollegiate Falun Gong club to better arrange activities to promote Falun Gong and tell people about the persecution. Cha Sheng became the overall coordinator for this effort. He can focus on his academic studies even though he's busy. He knows how to balance school and Falun Gong activities. Cha Sheng's academic achievement is a reflection of his cultivation state. He does well in class when he follows truthfulness, compassion, forbearance. Schoolwork gets harder when he becomes more relaxed with his cultivation. He said, though there are many tests, wisdom will come naturally and many things are easy to complete when I get rid of the attachments to fame and achievement. Falun Gong has become a guiding force in his life. Cha Sheng said, I was confused and frustrated by fame, self-interest, and sentiment before. Since practicing Falun Gong, I now look inward to find my attachments and follow truthfulness, compassion, forbearance. I no longer feel lost when facing problems. Dafa is my guide.
Dark Secrets of China's Hong Kong Psychiatric Hospitals. Hong Kong hospitals, high-security psychiatric hospitals directly administered by the Chinese Ministry of Public Security, have been noted as places of abuse in the U.S. Department of State's, DOS, annual human rights country reports for China for the past several years. The 2011 report states, regulations governing security officials' ability to remand a person to an Hong Kong facility were not clear, and detainees had no mechanism for objecting to claims of mental illness by security officials. Patients in these hospitals reportedly were medicated against their will and forcibly subjected to electric shock treatment. Yet despite documented abuses in Chinese psychiatric institutions, the Hong Kong facilities, which ironically translate as peace and health facilities for the mentally ill, are not as widely known. They are so much more covered up that many veteran psychiatrists, lawyers specializing in the rights of the mentally ill, and criminal psychology professors have stated that they knew nothing about such facilities. Family visits to Falun Gong practitioners at Hong Kong facilities are forbidden. Many family members don't know the whereabouts of their loved ones who are incarcerated in such hospitals. Labor camp parallel. Hong Kong hospitals, psychiatric hospitals directly administered by the Ministry of Public Security, have an extra-legal structure and process strikingly similar to the former labor camp system that was declared shut down in 2013. Police can arbitrarily send anyone to the hospitals for unlawful incarceration without due process. In fact, the Administrative Department for Hong Kong Hospitals is the same department that is in charge of detention centers. Therefore, the police frequently rotate Falun Gong practitioners between detention centers, brainwashing centers, and Hong Kong facilities, subjecting them to intensive brainwashing tactics at each facility. Practitioners who refuse to renounce their belief after incarcerations in detention centers, labor camps, and brainwashing centers are usually transferred to Hong Kong hospitals for more brutal psychiatric abuse. It is well known that the Chinese Communist Party, CCP, frequently uses mental health facilities to torture dissidents or political activists. Although abuses have been reported at a wide variety of mental health treatment facilities in China, only Hong Kong hospitals are officially designated as able to hold patients against their will and restrict their freedom. These facilities have a long history of maintaining domestic security for the communist regime. As early as January 1988, the Ministry of Public Security established standards for forcibly committing patients to Hong Kong facilities. Among the five populations targeted for incarceration in Hong Kong facilities, two are those classed as seriously interfering with public order, and those who disrupt social stability. Falun Gong practitioners, political dissidents, and citizens who dare to protest government policies frequently have these labels slapped onto them to justify confining them in Hong Kong hospitals. More Hong Kong hospitals were established after the persecution of Falun Gong began in 1999. In September 2004, the Ministry of Public Security issued a public notice requiring provinces, autonomous regions, and municipalities to set up Hong Kong hospitals as soon as possible if they didn't have them already. Loophole in mental health code allows healthy people to be confined against their will in Hong Kong hospitals. The mental health code was formally implemented in China on May 1, 2013. The code sets out the principle of voluntary hospitalization and states that only those with severe symptoms or who present a danger of harming others can be forcibly detained in mental health facilities. However, the code leaves loopholes that do not protect citizens from being arbitrarily labeled as mentally ill. In deciding upon whether a person poses a danger of harming others, there is a huge gray area that police and relevant government agencies have exploited in the persecution of Falun Gong practitioners, political dissidents, and petitioners. Petitioners in China are citizens who visit appeals offices to protest unpopular government policies. The police send someone to an Hong Kong hospital that is administered by the police department. So whether one is diagnosed with a mental disorder, what medications he takes and how they are administered, or when a patient is released, are all issues controlled by the police. There is no third-party inspection for Hong Kong facilities. Since the implementation of the Mental Health Code, many Falun Gong practitioners are still being detained in Hong Kong hospitals and have been newly incarcerated in such facilities. For example, practitioner Wang Dong from Chanchi Province, practitioner Qin Han Mei, Zhou Wenjuan, Zhang Bing, and Zhu Chuqing from Wuhan, Hubei Province, were sent to Hong Kong hospitals in 2014. Psychiatric drug abuse, a tool to torture Falun Gong practitioners. Since the persecution of Falun Gong began in 1999, many practitioners have been falsely labeled as mentally ill. They are incarcerated in Hong Kong hospitals, injected with drugs that damage the central nervous system, subjected to shock treatment, force-fed, and beaten, all of which treatments are currently banned in the international medical circle. Many people have truly become mentally ill or have died as a result of the CCP's frequent use of toxic drugs in Hong Kong hospitals. Some examples are presented below. Ms. Liang Juqin and other Falun Gong practitioners were taken to Tongshan, Hong Kong Hospital in fall 2000, where they were injected with nerve-damaging drugs. Most of the practitioners recounted later that the injections were painful, producing severe symptoms that persisted a long time after the injection. Symptoms included heart discomfort, stiff tongue, severely altered gait, nervousness, abnormal thoughts, dull eyes, and memory loss. Ms. Liang Juqin suffered heart failure and went into shock twice after receiving injections of psychiatric drugs. She could not take care of herself for 3 years and eventually passed away in 2009. Another practitioner, Li Fengjin, had severe memory loss after receiving forced injections in an Hong Kong hospital. She could not perform daily functions and became emaciated. Practitioner Yang Bao Chun from Handan, Hebei Province, suffered torture in Handan labor camp in 2002, leading to amputation of his right leg. The labor camp sent him to Handan Hong Kong Hospital 3 times, where he was injected with nerve-damaging drugs for 5 years. By the time his family finally took him home in 2009, he had truly become mentally ill. Turmoil in Heilongjiang. Local practitioners and residents harassed and monitored during high-profile trial. Jinshanjiang, a small farming area in northeastern China, was recently under siege during a high-profile trial of 4 Falun Gong practitioners in December. Plainclothes and uniformed police officers were stationed throughout the city. Police cars filled all the parking spots along the streets. The police set up checkpoints at transportation centers, highway toll stations, local stores, and hotels. Everyone was required to show their IDs and confirm that they weren't Falun Gong practitioners before the police would let them pass. At a gas station, a local resident who forgot to bring his ID was ordered to verbally abuse Falun Gong and its founder before he was allowed to leave. At a local school, one teacher threatened the kids that Falun Gong practitioners are kidnapping children. Shaken by the teacher's words, a student, surnamed Lee, suffered heart pains and was taken to a hospital. A high-profile trial. In March 2014, 7 Falun Gong practitioners and 4 human rights lawyers were arrested for petitioning the freedom of practitioners detained in a black jail. Under escalating international attention, 3 of the practitioners and the 4 lawyers were released. However, 4 practitioners, Wang Yanqing, Meng Fan Li, Shen Meng Wen, and Li Guifeng, remain in custody and were placed on trial from December 17th to 19th, 2014. According to an insider, extra police from 15 nearby farms were dispatched here by the Provincial Political and Legal Affairs Committee. Staff from the local residential committee, farm personnel, school teachers, and even janitors were summoned by the authorities. Along the 2,500-meter-long road, about 1.5 miles, leading to the court, nearly 2,000 people were monitoring the situation on the trial day. During the 3-day trial, the 8 lawyers representing the practitioners encountered tremendous interference from Xinjiang authorities. The police set up several checkpoints on their way to the court. Their IDs and minivan were confiscated, making them 1 hour late for the trial. Bailiffs physically assaulted the lawyers during the trial, and plainclothes officers followed them after the trial. Harassment of local Falun Gong practitioners. Falun Gong practitioners near Jianzhanjiang were monitored by police during the 3 days of the trial, and in some cases, during the several days leading up to the trial. Some practitioners' family members were monitored by the police themselves, while others were threatened and pressured by the local police to monitor their practitioner family members. For those who had planned to attend and observe the trial, the police stayed at their homes and would not allow them to leave. In the early morning of December 16th, the day before the trial, 13 police officers stood in line in front of the home of defendant Mr. Qi Menghuan's mother, preventing her and other family members from leaving the home. Mr. Xi's sister had to obtain special permission from the police supervisor in order to go to work. In the afternoon of December 16th, when Mr. Xi's brother came to their mother's home, he found 5 policemen playing cards at the door. Ms. Han Shu Hong, Mr. Xu Mengwen's sister-in-law, came from out of town to attend the trial on December 17th. After passing several checkpoints, she was stopped outside of the court and arrested, along with more than 20 other people, including Mr. Xi's daughter, Ms. Xu Jiaojian. The police body searched Ms. Han and seized her cell phone, as well as the cash and the jewelry she was wearing. When she demanded that the police provide a list of confiscated items, the police rebuffed her rudely. Although Ms. Han was released at 4:30 p.m. when the trial had adjourned, she was shadowed by 2 police officers over the next several days. In the week after the trial, the local authorities continued to harass Mr. Xi's family. That's all we have for you this week. If you like the contents, please go to our website to subscribe to the weekly newsletter or send your suggestions and feedback to editor@en.minghui.org. Thank you for listening.